today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Rabina Mahaga, Pat, and welcome along to the second hour of Tip Today. Now, some of your WhatsApp and text, Margaret was on, to say that Matty McGrath is so right. Every town should have a community hospital. St. Bridget's should never have been closed. And I must say that Cluain is an example to the country. Well, that's for sure. It's a fantastic hospital. But it would have had to fight its case, indeed, over the years as well. Jim was on to say, just got the tail end of your chat with Matty McGrath. Read the pyrite in the houses. We have it in our extension, which was built 10 years ago. Blocks tested and showed big amounts of pyrite. And so it's not just Donegal or Mayo, obviously, where the problem lies. Thanks for that, Jim. I didn't realise it was an issue in Tipperary, but Matty McGrath mentioned it there, and he also said there's some issues in Limerick where this is concerned too. Let me see, what else have I got for you? I wanted to bring you something else. Doesn't a bond cover insurance and quality costs, it says here. And, okay, it goes on to say, yeah, what about challenging the insurance companies? I put that to Matty McGrath because I don't fully understand that. Why, obviously they entered into a bond when they were buying the houses or building the houses, and that should have been, you know, you'd imagine there'd be some comeback where that is concerned rather than the taxpayer having to put a hand in the pocket again. And if Matty is right, it could be up to 5 billion. Now, the minister is indicating in primetime last night 1.5 to 2 billion, but it could be as high as 5 billion. It's incredible, isn't it? All right. Delighted to be joined by our GP, Dr. Pat Harold. Good morning to you, Pat.
Morning, Fran.
Good to talk to you. I suppose the big medical talking point of the last few days certainly is the story of the footballer Christian Eriksen over the weekend, where he literally dropped down on the pitch, and the defibrillator and the people involved saved his life. What did you make of that, Pat?
Yeah, poor old Christian. I mean, he tormented Ireland many a time, but he is a spine-strapping athlete, you know, in the prime of his life, which was scary. It brought to mind, there was a young fellow called Fabrice Mumba, who played for Bolton a few years ago. And no, I don't know that much about soccer. I looked this up. Mm. But he was on the news as well. And that guy was playing, and there was a cardiologist in the crowd who dashed forward and got the defibrillator. And he worked in him for about 40 minutes. And I think he shocked him back about 27 or 28 times. And Fabrice is still alive and well, which goes to show that it's a combination of the defibrillator and knowledge on how to use the thing. You know, if you don't have a defibrillator and you have cardiac arrest, you have about a 5% outside the hospital. They say 8% in the UK. Maybe they said in Denmark in 2001, 4% chance. So the Danish being Danes got their act together and put a defibrillator in every public place. But, you know, Fran, I mean, there was a lot of defibrillators around a few years ago. I was involved in a scheme myself around in Drumminier. We got a defibrillator, and we got Ollie Hayes down to supervise the training. You know, Barack Obama's cousin, so you can't say you're not going in at the top end there.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the pandemic, I think an awful lot of them are sitting on boxes and walls, and nobody knows where the key is. And it's not accessible. They only last about.
And the batteries have to be looked at as well.
The batteries, they have to be refurbished and rechecked every year, like any sort of a thing, a burglar alarm or anything like that. You know, you have to have a technician come in and have a look at it every year. So, and I think a lot of these are reaching their sell-by date. I know. That I just was looking it up. The GAA actually, at last March, they looked and they found that 42 people had been resuscitated successfully.
Go on.
By defibrillators in GAA pitches around Ireland. And it's called the GAA Community Heart Programme. Yeah. And if you look at that, the first thing you see is a really fit-looking fellow who was training a Camogie team who dropped, and luckily there was a paramedic there. And the paramedic himself said the defibrillator was kept in the office, and because it was a Saturday morning, it was open. Well, it usually wouldn't have been open. You know, so you had the combination of the defibrillator that was in working order and the person who knew how to use it. And so your man, his grandies, they're playing Camogie in the video. So they're doing a thing where you raise them for for GA pitches, and the going price for any defibrillator is approximately €2,000, which, you know, but the message is, I think anyone in their community now, if you see a rusty old defibrillator hanging on the wall and the key is a mobile number of somebody who retired 3 years ago and everything like that, it's time to take a good hard look at it. But fan, it's more than the reason like most people, if handed a defibrillator, would probably need to use it. You know, they'd probably get an awful shock themselves before they turn the thing on at all, because, I mean, I'd be kind of scared to use it.
Would you? Yeah.
Well, I would and I wouldn't, you know. I mean, I've done these courses so often and I've taught them and I've, you know, with medical students and with trainee GPs and everything, but there still is that little bit of fear. And, you know, in any accident, you know, there's a sort of a chain of command. You know, if I'm at any scene where an ambulance comes along, if it's something that they do all day, every day, and they do maybe once every 6 months, you know, you very subtly say something like, you're the boss, or you're, and so people know who's in charge straight away. Because any emergency I've ever come across, there's people running around roaring at each other and do this and do that and everything. And you need a steady head. And you need,
and seemingly the captain of the Danish team proved, you know, real leadership qualities in terms of how he handled the incident as well.
Yeah. You need to get all that going, and that requires a bit of training. And if the Tip FM listeners, if you do one thing today, if you're near a phone or a computer, look up Vinnie Jones, Staying Alive. And Vinnie Jones, you might remember, is a soccer player.
And an actor as well, isn't he?
And an actor. Yeah. And it's like a short gangster film, about 2 minutes, but it's how to do CPR. And your poor fellow who drops in front of you with a 5% chance, if an onlooker just does the Vinnie Jones thing, their chances of survival doubles.
Will you talk to me a bit about CPR? Because I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and he said to me that the best that CPR can do is to keep the oxygen flowing, but that it probably won't restart the heart.
It probably won't, but it keeps you going. It doubles your chances. You see, the first thing is somebody drops. You make sure that they're not electrocuted or gassed or something like that. And I'm not going to give CPR. I'm not going to give defibrillator instructions down the radio, but you can't use them anywhere it's wet or that, because you get a shock yourself. But the CPR keeps the blood going. They don't do the kiss of life, as they used to call it, anymore. It's compressing the sternum and keeping the oxygen moving. But that in itself is a great thing to do, because if the ambulance takes, the best case, 10 minutes to come, and you've been done that for 10 minutes, you've kept them going for the 10 minutes.
And you're keeping the brain alive too, aren't you?
Every minute after the cardiac event, your chance of survival go down about 7%.
Wow.
So, you double it by knowing your bit of CPR.
We'll talk about defibrillation in a moment, but with CPR, can you do harm?
Well, if you don't do it right, if you don't do it right, in fact, if you're looking at Grey's Anatomy and these sort of things, they're doing it wrong as often as not. You know, but I suppose the big thing is breaking ribs. You know, but you know, it's very hard to break a rib, really. You know, you want to be really very heavy and do it very badly to do that. But the chest compression's down about 2 inches up and down, and about 100 a minute. It's kind of hard work. But that's the thing. And somebody rings for help. And if, when you do ring an ambulance, and I've done it so often, you'd be amazed how many people start screaming and roaring down the phone, because the person on the other side end of the thing is going to be very calm. Do you know the postcode? Postcodes are very, very important. Yeah, they make a huge difference in this. If you don't know your postcode, you know, I don't know how many people say, hold on, it's on the ESB bill and they're looking in the
mantelpiece.
You know, but they will say things like, where are you? And they'll start screaming, this is an emergency.
Yeah.
Don't know where it is. You know, I mean, I don't want to blame anyone, but this is the way people can react. So calm and steady and give the directions and stress what's happening. And they'll do their best to get there fast. In fact, they're doing it with drones in Canada. They send out a drone, and you know the company who makes the drones is called Ericsson.
Go on. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So they do it in the city. They reckon that they'll dispatch the drone with the defibrillator on it. But that's where you need
your
training.
Idea. Yeah.
Yeah, because they found, they did a thing in Seattle, and they found that your chances of surviving your heart attack if you drop are about 70%, because they teach CPR resuscitation on that in schools regularly. And you'd wonder why they don't do that everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
Like Mwamba, the poor guy from Bolton, who died, he says it should be mandatory by law in every public place to defibrillator. And the other thing is this should be taught in schools.
Where the defibrillator is concerned as well, my big fear, if I were to help out in that situation, would be to determine the condition of the patient who has dropped, because it needn't necessarily be a heart attack, if you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, if you can find a pulse, or the absence of a pulse, are they breathing? And if they're not breathing, you just put, there's two pads, you put one in the front, there's a diagram on the thing where to put on the pads. And then this is the amazing thing, the defibrillator will read the state of your heart. You know the ECG thing you see in the TV when it's going beep,
yes.
beep,
yeah.
That thing. It'll read it and it'll analyse it. And
if it decides a shock is appropriate. That will tell you that the heart, just in case the heart is working and it's something else, that will tell you.
Yeah.
All
and
right.
if it actually talks to you. The defibrillator will say, and if it says, charge administered, stand back, and the defibrillator will shock the heart. Some people actually have an implantable device. It's like a little defibrillator in their heart.
Yes.
And if the heart drops to a certain rhythm, it'll shock you back, which I believe gives you a right fright. You know, you're there.
Mm.
I know somebody's had it happen to him a couple of times. He's there and suddenly, bang, the heart just kicks back in again. He hadn't realised it was going on. But that's an implantable defibrillator. But AED means outside the heart. That's the defibrillator device. And it'll say, administering shock, stand back. Everybody stands back. Bang. And then they say, continue CPR.
What this has also brought up is the sudden adult death syndrome. In other words, perfectly healthy people who seem to, you know, just drop for no apparent reason. What do we know about that, Pat?
Oh, Fran, I would say little enough, you know.
Yeah.
And without wanting to scare people, I don't really, do you know something, Frank? Yeah, I don't really know enough about it off the top of my head to talk to you today about it. I think I'd be conscious out there that there's people know more than me, and I'm not going to go there.
But it certainly seems, Pat, that not many people know much about that. I mean, it's an anomaly. It seems to just happen.
Or just that they didn't find a cause.
That's a good point, yeah.
That they didn't find the cause, and it could be a heart arrhythmia, because if the electricity in the wiring throws off the wrong one, you know, there might be no trace of that at autopsy or afterwards.
Right, okay. And just a couple of other things, I suppose, that has come up in light of this as well. I'm not sure if you want to get into this too, but it appears that he was vaccinated a couple of weeks before this happened. Is there anything in that?
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
I actually heard the Danish manager say, I think it's a couple of weeks, man. I know you probably have it in front of you, but I think it was before that.
Was it?
And even whether it was or it wasn't, I wouldn't read anything into that.
You wouldn't read anything into that at all. All right. But if anything, it starts the conversation about defibrillators again, Pat, and, you know, just in case we were getting a bit complacent about it.
Well, that's it, you know. I mean, I was in a place at the weekend. They've got the old phone box done up, and there was a defibrillator there, and I was very impressed. They had the key and where to get it and who had it, and the officers. I think it was all tied in with the security people who were cruising up and down. So if somebody went to that public space, there's a clear idea who has it, but there's an awful lot of rusty old defibrillators.
Yeah, I know, it's a big issue.
And I think in your communities, you know, if you looked into it, apart from anything else, getting a wee defibrillator group together and a CPR and a first aid thing together, it's kind of very bonding for community. You know, we had great fun meeting down at the hostel in Rumineer and going through it, and, you know, everybody seemed to know a bit about what to do in an emergency. You know, there's more things like that, the Heimlich manoeuvre when somebody chokes.
Of course, yeah.
That kind of thing, you know, all that stuff, which is very good to know. It would be great if it was taught in schools.
Interesting call to Emma that says, I'm a referee for GAA in North Tipperary, and I believe all referees should be trained because it's really important. We did a course, we got the training done. You might have trained personnel in a club, but it's always good to have this in case something happens. That's a very good idea, isn't it? The referee
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, it's a great idea, and you have to because you can't go ahead without a referee, and you have to retrain every couple of years to keep up the skills. You know, it's like anything else. You know, like picking up a musical instrument or something, you get you get rusty and you get these skills, so you have to keep the skills up.
Right, lots of questions in very specific stuff about defibrillators. I'm not sure how much you want to get into, but it's saying here, is a defibrillator only used when there's no pulse?
Well, you know, I could really give people a wrong steer here.
Mm, okay.
So, there's all kinds of scenarios, you know, and it's far too complicated to do.
Yeah.
You know, you'd need diagrams.
And we don't want to mislead people.
It's all there on YouTube. But I wouldn't really, you know, I mean, I think a bit of training is what you're looking for, you know, especially anybody who's in charge of a defibrillator, who's the designated defibrillator officer, should know what they're doing.
Right. A lot of questions coming in for you about vaccination, Pat. So where are we? Have you any extra information for us or anything on that?
I'm still going strong. A lot of the GPs are winding down now. We're getting into the 30s. The 30 age group is going. They're going to increase I really feel sorry for anyone who is waiting sort of 12, 15, 16 weeks for the after one. And they're probably worried about the Delta, you know, which does seem to be getting a big foothold in England. We're that bit a month about behind their programme. But and then again, you know, if you're called for your second Astra, get it. They're talking about mixing and matching the vaccines a bit, but that hasn't come through yet. It has in some countries, it has in Canada and Belgium and places.
Yeah.
But I think if you're called for the second Astra, get it, because they came out with something yesterday that, you know, your Astra and your mRNA vaccines, almost exactly 92%, 93% efficacy against hospitalisation in the Delta variant, which means you're properly sorted if you get it. So if you get the AstraZeneca vaccine against this, so just log on and get done. And some GPs still have thought to it. I hope we'd be kind of finished because it's tiring. And, you know, it means the couple of days you spend vaccinating, you have to shove everything forward to
of course,
the couple of days you weren't.
At least the pharmacists are on board now.
The pharmacists are on board. They're getting the Johnson & Johnson, the one shot.
Yeah.
And it's for over 50s. But, you know, it's grand. And the pharmacist can do it there and then. So, and apparently, Andrew was saying this morning, there's been quite an uptake. So, rock on down to your pharmacist.
I'm booked in for my second one on Friday, so looking forward to that in Nina, and I'll be done then. How long afterwards, Pat? Are you covered?
I think it's 1 week for the Pfizer. It's 2 weeks for Moderna, but the magic figure is 9 days. For
9 days.
That's
okay.
When you get the maximum bangs for your bucks.
Right.
You know, you get the that just seems to be when it rises, and you'll be absolutely sorted. You're down on Friday. I'll meet you for a cuppa.
Well, yeah, I'll take you up on that, Pat. I'll take you up on that. Listen, look after yourself, Pat. It's always a pleasure, and thanks very much indeed.
Take care, and just look at the Vinnie Jones staying alive, and look at the rusty old defibrillator around the corner. If they're more than 9 or 10 years, you need to look at the situation again.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Pat. Thank you, and bye bye to you. That's our GP, the very popular Pat Harrell, speaking to us there, 1800-938-007. Catherine was on to us to say that Ireland is turning into a real police state. There was more freedom back in 1916, Fran. Do this, do that. What's next? Says Catherine. Much being made yesterday of the extra powers as well for the Gardaí. Maybe that's what you're making reference to in terms of they can demand your passwords for your phone, your computer and stuff now, in certain circumstances. I presume that that's what you're talking about anyway. 1800-938-007. All right, and lots more coming into us. Give me a chance to read through it and I will bring it to you in just a moment.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie. Join